This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, April 8th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. In 1903, the Wright brothers paved the way for our world of airmail and passenger jets by completing a 12-second, 120-foot flight in their airplane Flyer across the beach at Kitty Hawk. In the coming days, NASA is hoping to engineer its own Wright brothers moment by test flying the 4-pound space helicopter Ingenuity on Mars. If successful, it would be the first powered flight on another planet. Our science writer Robert Lee Hotz will join us with the details after these headlines. We report that two of the biggest winners in the pandemic delivery boom are now looking to launch their own credit cards as a way to reward frequent users. The grocery delivery service Instacart will be partnering with JPMorgan Chase, according to people familiar with the matter. And DoorDash, the food delivery company, is choosing between offers from more than 10 large banks and fintech companies. Both Instacart and DoorDash are hoping that the cards will stoke customer loyalty even after the pandemic is over and help attract new customers. Banks see the new partnerships as a way to diversify beyond travel reward cards, which of course became less attractive when the pandemic halted travel. More than a month after suspected Chinese hackers carried out a cyber attack on Microsoft email software, Microsoft and U.S. government officials are still trying to figure out how they did it. Microsoft has learned that the attack would have required the hackers to have knowledge of the email account names of system administrators. Our cybersecurity reporter Dustin Volt says that's put a wrinkle in the investigation. Here's Dustin speaking on last night's episode of our sister podcast, What's News?
Given sort of the scale of the attack with so many different victims, as well as the rapidity with which it was carried out, this led a lot of people at Microsoft and in the U.S. government to think that they actually maybe collected information ahead of time. Now, that leads to a number of different theories, including whether or not China mined the enormous databases of personal records that had previously hacked over the last, you know, decade or longer, or if they potentially, you know, turned to social media sites and did all sorts of sort of scanning and scraping operations to collect the information from LinkedIn and Facebook and that sort of thing ahead of time to make sure that they could carry this attack out as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
We should note here, while Microsoft has attributed the attack to China, the Biden administration has not weighed in on who's responsible, and China has denied any involvement. The United Kingdom has launched a new antitrust regulator aimed at reining in big tech companies. The Digital Markets Unit will ensure tech giants like Facebook and Google don't crowd out competition. The body will have limited powers at first, until Parliament approves legislation governing its oversight powers. All right, coming up next, the Ingenuity drone is set to begin test flights on Mars. More on what you should know after the break.
I'm Alex Yule, host of The Readback from Barron's. It's been an extraordinary year for stock markets, particularly for companies going public. IPOs soared, and they show no sign of slowing down. But the boom didn't come out of the blue, and there was plenty of pain on the road to IPO success. So how do you put a price on innovation? This season on The Readback, we'll find out. We're winding back the clock on a decade of IPOs, from Moderna and Facebook to Uber and Airbnb. The Readback is available wherever you get podcasts.
Just a couple of months ago, NASA's Perseverance rover landed on Mars, tasked with looking for signs of past life on the red planet. But Perseverance was carrying more than just sensors and cameras. It also brought Ingenuity along for the ride, a small robot helicopter. Ingenuity is expected to begin test flights in the coming days, and if successful, they'll be a milestone for space exploration. And so to tell us more about it, we've got our science writer Robert Lee Hotz on the line. Hey, Lee, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, it's always great to do these.
So I want to start with a little bit of context here. Why is it so challenging to attempt flight on Mars? What do we need to know about Mars's atmosphere?
Well, the thing about trying to fly anything on Mars in particular is that the atmosphere is so much thinner than it is on Earth. In order to fly, of course, you're essentially using wings or rotors or something to push yourself through air. And so the density of the air has got a big role to play in how you do that and how effectively you can do it and how easy it is. Now, the air on Mars at around ground level, where Ingenuity, this drone, will be flying, is roughly equivalent to the air density on Earth at about, 100,000 feet or so, say 22 miles up. Most conventional helicopters don't fly any higher than 10,000 feet. So you're talking about moving into a whole different aerospace regime. I mean, this is territory for helicopters that we haven't even explored on Earth, if you like, but certainly on another planet, this is pretty wild.
So it sounds like flying through Mars's atmosphere is kind of a couple of challenges unto itself. And that's actually something that one aeromechanical engineer who helped build Ingenuity, Ben Pippenberg, actually talked about in an interview with our video team.
Engineering something like this for, you know, an environment that we've never actually flown in before is very challenging. There have been a lot of other space probes and missions that have gone to Mars, and so we have some understanding of the environment. However, nobody's ever flown on Mars before.
So, Lee, what did the team come up with? What does Ingenuity look like, and how is it engineered to move through Mars's atmosphere?
It is a very innocuous-looking object. It doesn't have any fancy fins or flashy anything. It has four struts that it sits on, made of carbon fiber, very lightweight. It has a box at its center, and that's where the cameras and sensors and navigation software is all processed and controlled. It then has two very special counter-rotating propellers made out of a special lightweight carbon fiber foam matrix material. And then on top of it, it has solar panels to power its lithium ion batteries and a tiny antenna to send the news of its success or failure back to Earth. The challenge is to create rotor relays that are engineered in such a way that they can function properly in this extremely thin Martian air, about 1% the density of the air on Earth. And to do that, they require a very sophisticated high-speed electronic flight control system, because this drone flies on its own. This flight is not something that a human operator can be involved in. It's too far, satellite configurations don't line up properly, and the delays of radio transmissions between Earth and Mars are just simply too long for any human being to respond to the unpredictable gusts of wind or whatever unanticipated things will happen during flight.
And, you know, interestingly, the brains of Ingenuity might have something in common with many listeners' smartphones. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, that is one of the extremely cool things for me about the Ingenuity helicopter drone. At the heart of it is a chipset. The brains of this remarkable drone are the chips that are found in many, many common Android phones. It's a chip made by, in this case, by Qualcomm, called the Snapdragon 801. It's in fact used in drones on Earth. They make a version of it, what they call a flight platform. And even more than that, the chipset comes with a built-in operating system. Up until now, NASA has had very special customized software designed specifically for, you know, the rigors and challenges of interplanetary flight. This craft is running Linux, the operating system that's practically, I mean, it's in what controls the internet. It's what's like behind practically every banking financial system. It is the open source operating system that is enabling so much of what we do computationally on Earth. In other words, these are routine, tried and true pieces of terrestrial technology, but that we've now taken to another world.
And so we're expecting test flights to begin any day now. And Pippenberg, that engineer from before, he said that's going to be a pretty risky endeavor all its own.
You know, there are 1,000 ways that different parts on the helicopter could fail, and only one way that it goes correctly, which is that everything really works.
So, Lee, can you tell us more? What are these test flights going to entail?
Well, to be honest, remarkably little. On this first flight, they will power it up through their remote control commands. It will spin up its rotors and it will go straight up if it is performing properly. It will get to an altitude of about 10 feet. and it will hover there for maybe 30 seconds or so. It will perhaps maneuver in a kind of a turn, maybe make a little bit of a circle, and then it will land. Elapsed time, 90 seconds. The reason the flight is limited to about 90 seconds, and all of the test flights, it's scheduled to make 5 if it was all working properly, are all going to last no longer than about 90 seconds, is again because of the strange and exotic characteristics of the Martian atmosphere. On Earth, we rely on the atmosphere to sort of as a cooling element. Heat is convected away from whatever object is generating it. And the Martian air is just too thin to kind of do that with any speed. So that these high-speed rotors, these servo rotors that drive the helicopter blades, generate too much heat. And no matter what they did, they even designed special beryllium heat sinks. They could not find a way to make the heat dissipate fast enough in the thin Martian air to keep this helicopter from, well, how to put it, melting down. So the flights are limited to about 90 seconds before they overheat. Once it touches down, it will transmit that data back to the rover, which will transmit it up to a satellite, which will transmit it back to Earth. And there, mission engineers who've been biting their fingernails for 8 hours at least to find out what happened will perhaps start to cheer.
You know, it seems like this might be a one small step moment. I'm wondering what the giant leap is. What is the hope for this technology if it's successful?
Well, indeed, it's a small step for a drone, a small hop, if you like, for a drone, and a giant leap for Mars exploration. What NASA is hoping here, if this flight is successful, they will be able to incorporate these kinds of autonomous aerial vehicles into interplanetary exploration. We have been sending spacecraft and rovers and things, landers, to Mars for 50 years, yet we have explored firsthand not even a percentage, one percentage point of the terrain. There are some of the largest canyons in the solar system, mountains, volcanic craters, gullies. You could use these aerial drones as scouts, as aerial sensors, to go where rovers now cannot explore. And should human colonists or human astronauts ever land on Mars, these could serve as scouts for human explorers to look over the rim of the next hill to see what might be worth encountering.
All right, that's our science writer, Robert Lee Hotz. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you. This was a treat, as always.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.